This is Victoria of the UnleashedHeart.com, and you're listening to Grieving Voices, a podcast for hurting hearts who desire to be heard, or anyone who wants to learn how to better support loved ones experiencing loss. As a 30-plus year griever and advanced grief recovery method specialist, I know how badly the conversation around grief needs to change. Through this podcast, I aim to educate grievers and non-grievers alike, spread hope, and inspire compassion toward those hurting. Lastly, by providing my heart with ears and this platform, grievers have the opportunity to share their wisdom and stories of loss and resiliency. How about we talk about grief like we talk about the weather? Let's get started. Thank you for tuning in to Grieving Voices. Today, my guest is Sherry Dunlevy, and she is the author of How Can I Help? And founder of Graduating Grief and host of the Graduating Grief podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Victoria, it's my pleasure.
And today is a very special day as we are recording, because what brings you to Grieving Voices is the loss of your son.
Yes, today would have been my son Brandon's 22nd birthday.
So this is a very special full circle podcast moment.
Yes, absolutely. It's kind of surreal.
I've had my own full circle moments lately too. Tomorrow is 34 years. My dad is gone. So,
oh my.
Yeah. No, is it tomorrow? What is the date today?
29th.
31st on Wednesday, okay. Actually.
A couple days.
So thank you for being here and sharing your story about Brandon. And so let's start there.
Okay. Well, 22 years ago, my husband and I were headed to a hospital to give birth to our second son, Brandon. At 18 weeks into the pregnancy, when we went for our first ultrasound, that's when we realized that there were complications. So it was a very bittersweet. No, it wasn't a bittersweet day. It was a very scary day, because I knew that as long as he was inside of me, he was safe, but all bets were off beginning today. And I'm just really emotional today, I guess, because I don't have happy memories of this time. We knew there were complications. We knew they were going to whisk him away. I knew I was never going to get to hear him cry. I was never going to get to hold him. They whisked him away to another children's hospital. I mean, I had nine doctors, you know, in the delivery room with me, and I had to have a C-section. And so, you know, I knew all this going into it. And so, you know, you just, all bets were off. And my son lived 29 days. So it was just very, I don't have those happy memories that most moms have going into labor. I didn't even get to hold my child that day. You know, I got to hold my child as he was dying. So I think that's what makes these birthdays a little bit more different than if you've had someone and you've been able to love them longer than what we have, or you've had the experience of welcoming them into the world. So I don't really have a lot of fond memories. So I don't look back a lot. But these anniversary days kind of, you do look back. I glance back. It's too painful to stay back there. And there's no reason to, because it doesn't serve any purpose other than extending suffering. You know, I live now in this moment. And so it's just very challenging to process all of this. I mean, my son's life and death has had such an amazing impact on my life, and transformation that has come from it has been absolutely amazing. But I really don't give myself the time or the pause to look back, except for these few days, one in March and one in April, when he was born and when he died, that I allow myself to go there. That makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. And I think that's an aspect of grief that even I have forgotten, or maybe didn't give much thought to, in that
you can have a loss that where you don't have those fond memories at all.
Right.
And in a way, that's a lot of those fond memories are what kind of bring you peace or can bring you peace.
Right.
Too.
Right.
So I'm warm. I'm holding you in a hug today.
Thank you.
And I know we talked just very briefly before we started recording that you plan to really take today to tend your heart and give yourself the time and space to do so. And it's very important. And
it is, but you know, I mean, like, I say I'm going to give myself some time. It's some time. I have a feeling that subconsciously I overschedule myself on these days. And I just wonder if that's a way to like say, you don't have to think about this if you don't want to, or that you don't have the time to think about this. I mean, like I actually added to my schedule this morning, like, and then I'm thinking, what are you doing? And then I'm thinking, I know exactly what you're doing. So that's when I decided I really cannot add anything else. I really need some time and some space to just process this a little today and spend some time with it. Not a lot of time to dwell, but just process the feelings that I'm feeling, you know, allow those to come. They're legitimate.
And then let them pass.
Right.
Yeah. Instead of stuffing them down with work or other means that we do. And the body knows. I was just talking with someone not that long ago, and even 20 some years later, it's like around this time every year.
Yep.
And all these years later, you know, you find yourself, you know, maybe getting run down, or, you know, it shows up differently for everyone. But I think it's that to have that awareness though, and to maybe even plan for it in advance. There was one woman who shared how she had this, it's like a daily book, just kind of really just to give a little hope and insight and about grief, but I can't remember the title of it, but she said that's, and it's 365 days, you know, a phrase or a saying every day. And she said, that's really, really helped her in her, she was a widow and had young children. But she said that was really helpful for her, but she found herself having to plan, you know, for that time of year. And, so what, especially when those, in those early days, what were some of the things that kind of added to that grief? The fact that you didn't have any joyful memories and things like that, but anything that people said or comments or ways that people didn't support you that you hoped they would have?
Yeah, I mean, there were, I was a television news anchor at the time. So I not only went through this, but I went through this all publicly. Oh. Right. And so it was very challenging. And it was very surprising because there were people who showed up for us in a way that was indescribable, that really, I did not know who they were. They knew who I was, but I did not know who they were. And so that was surprising to me, but was also surprising to me were people who were closest to us who were not there for us. And, in fact, I had one instance where, one of my closest friends, I thought she was going to say to me, I've got a sitter for the kids. Hang on. I'm coming up. You know, I'll be with you. We'll get through this together. And instead, I just couldn't believe my ears when she said, I'm sorry, I can't do this. And we ended the conversation, and I didn't hear back from her. And then one day, 6 years later, the phone rings and it's her. And she just kind of wanted to catch up. I've been thinking about you. You've been on my mind. And I thought, first of all, like, that ship has sailed. we, I was kind of like, honestly, my first reaction was like, you're kidding me, right? Like, you are seriously kidding me. I was kind. I was not rude. I probably was a lot more quiet than what I was. But then when I came off of that call, I really started to think, what was this about? Like, why all of a sudden? And, you know, and so that started me on my journey of wondering why people would abandon you when you need them the most. And maybe they don't even see it as abandonment, but that's what it was. Maybe they just see it as they didn't reach out, you know, but it was. And I came up with three scenarios. And the first one was that maybe it hit too close to home, you know, when you have children and you are giving birth to children and you're one of your dearest friends loses one of theirs, you just automatically think about, oh my gosh, what if that happened to me? And it's just so frightening that you can't even think about it. And like to even address my sadness makes it too sad for you. The second thing is that maybe you just have never, ever had to deal with this before. You don't know what to do or say. It's never really been modeled. No one in your life significant has died or that you know has died. So you just truly don't know. But I think the more common one truly is that people really want to do or say something. They're just afraid it's going to be the wrong thing. They're going to screw it up somehow. And so better to be safe than sorry. Better to just not say anything than say the wrong thing. Better not to do anything than do something that they think will bring on more pain. That being said, that's when I started, I don't know why, like this furious search for resources. Because I just kept thinking, there's got to be something out there to help people with this. This is just crazy, right? And I started to Google it and I would go on Amazon looking for it. And I would walk every time I was going to pass the bookstore, I would go in and look for a book. And I felt this calling and literally like, I don't know that I had this voice, but there was this knowing voice that said to me, if you can look all you want, but until you write it, you're not going to find it. I thought, oh my gosh, I don't write books. You know, like I don't do this. But the thing I always tell people, the difference between a good idea and a calling is that the calling doesn't stop. And it just kept calling me and calling me and calling me. And I don't know how to write a book. Well, then how can you find out how to write a book? You know, and so it just every time that I said yes, another door opened and another door opened and another door opened. So I really do feel like it was divinely guided. But needless to say, many years later, I wrote a book called How Can I Help? Your Go-To Guide for Helping Loved Ones Through Life's Difficulties. And it is that resource guide that helps all three of those people know what to do and say to help those that they love and care about go through difficult chapters in life, whether it's the loss of someone they love through death, whether it's a divorce, whether you've just been diagnosed with something that's terminal or chronic, whether you've had to quit your job to, you know, take care of a sick child or a ailing parent, whether you've lost a job, whatever the scenario of loss is, what can you do to help and support your friends during this time? And these aren't just my suggestions. Now I realize, oh, okay, that's why you were on television and a reporter. You know how to interview people. And so I interviewed people who've gone through all these scenarios because I found out that this isn't just death. This is any difficult chapter in life. Some people are there for you and some people just aren't. And so I wrote this book and I'm very proud of this book and it's a number one bestseller. And I love this book and I love talking about this book, but this book is not, I was hesitant to release the book because I didn't want the book to feel like it was pointing the finger at people. I don't want to point the finger at people. It's not about that at all. It's, I know you love your friends. I know you want to support them. So I know you're scared. Okay. So this isn't about you. This is about them. So let's make that mind shift first, that change that mindset. And then let's talk about what we can do that will really help them. Because that's what I wanted to know when I interviewed all these people. What was it that your friends and family did that was helpful to you, that they gave you what you needed to get through this? And what were some of those unique things? And what were some of the things that maybe weren't so helpful? Because I don't want to say wrong, because I want grieving and hurting people to realize that sometimes your friends will say things that say sound bizarre, that could be offensive. But I ask the hurting person to take some pause and extend some grace. Is the intention of their friend to hurt them? Or is it the intention loving and it's just awkward, right? Because we don't know what to do and say. And they're just trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat to make you feel better, right? Or they're relying on a cliche to make you feel better. I mean, we all know that, you know, they're not in a better place because we feel their best place would be with us, right? But I just really chose during that time not to get all weirded out over the awkwardness of what people say, because I just feel we're awkward because we don't talk about this enough. So that's kind of why I do what I do, so that I get the conversation started and I say, listen, this is why we're awkward. So let's start just stepping up and doing this stuff and do it afraid and, you know, extend grace to one another, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. You speak my language. And you know this because I'm, you know, as a grief recovery specialist, and I know that you've gone through grief recovery yourself. Mm-hmm. And my mission is the same. Let's talk about grief like we talk about the weather. That's, you know, the podcast was my calling. And that's why I have people come on like you to share what was helpful, what was unhelpful, you know, what mm-hmm. was unhelpful. Same idea. So we speak the same language.
Yes.
For sure. So let's speak to that, the grief recovery, if you don't mind for a moment, in when you discovered that and how it helped to transform your grieving experience.
Well, you know, I came late to the party. I didn't know about the grief recovery method. Actually, it was in the process of writing this book, and I had a coach that was coaching me in my business. And he asked me if I knew what a clairaudient was. And I said, no, I don't. And he said, a clairaudient is someone who receives messages. And the last two times we've met, I've been receiving these messages. And if you're open to it, I want to give you this message. I said, okay. And he said, I'm just being told that until you deal with your grief, you know, none of the things that we're working on now are going to work. And I said, who did you talk to? Because I hired him as a business coach. He knew I was writing a book, but I never told him what my book was about. And I didn't, he just had no way of knowing, right? I thought he had a way of knowing, but I'm like, all right. And so he said, you know, I have a friend who coaches this, and I would be happy to introduce you. And so she was a grief recovery method. I don't know what you call yourself, coach, facilitator, whatever. And I met with her, and it's so funny because my grief was two pronged. My grief was, of course, not dealing with the grief of the loss of my son, Brandon, but my surviving son, Trey, was graduating high school and leaving for college. And so I was losing another son, technically, right? In a different way, of course, but I had just devoted my whole life to being his mom, and this was my mission now. And so it was just very, I was like, oh, he's right. I do need to deal with this. And once I found out about what the grief recovery method was, once I got the grief recovery method handbook, once I went through the process, oh my gosh, this is like, these are the most amazing tools. And I think one of the things in the earliest chapters was, you know, if you had a heart problem, you would be going to the doctor to take care of this now. What is so different about your grief? And truth be told, you know, when I had my first son, Trey, I had postpartum depression. And so when Brandon was born and he was, and my doctor had already known that I had gone through postpartum depression and he was critically ill, well, automatically the thought was, we want to get you back on the antidepressants. But the thing was, is that I was on them for 13 years and I kept thinking, I know it's down there. I could feel it. I could feel it in me, but I could not bring it up and bring it out. I had no way of doing that. And it was just weird. So I just carried it with me. It was below the surface. At the time I was doing the grief recovery method, though, I had come off my antidepressants. So it was just like perfect timing because I was able to get there. I was able to get it and I was able to extract it and I was able to look at it and I was able to deal with it. And then I was able to release it. And it was the best gift I'd ever given myself.
And it is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes. And yeah, yes, because the tools are always there. The tools are always there.
And I want to touch on too something that I mention when I talk about grief recovery is that the sadness doesn't go away. Mm-mm. You know, your son still has not been with you. That doesn't go away.
No.
It is, but it doesn't have it, the impact of it, right? Mm-hmm. Is greatly lifted, maybe reduced, maybe even the impact is lifted and removed.
The pain is.
Pain, yes. The impact of the pain.
Yes. Yes.
Like
yes.
The crippling emotional pain.
Yes, yes. Yeah. The pain is lifted. You are able to, like I said, you know, I don't have, you. It doesn't, like what I say when I started graduating grief, it doesn't mean that you're never, ever going to be sad again. And they're like, I got this, I'm good, and never to be revisited again. It just means that it no longer has its power over you. It does not have the power to cripple you and take you under and keep you under and hold you under any longer. You know how to get back to the surface. You know how to see the sunshine. You know how to bask in the sunshine. You can seek your joy again.
It is possible.
Mm-hmm. It is. That's what I want people to know. It is possible, but you have to choose it. You have to
Absolutely.
Choose it.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to scream to the world?
Mm.
And wish people knew about your grief.
Well, here's what I'd like to scream to the world. Every life, no matter how long or short it is, can make an impact. And my son lived 29 days, and here, 22 years later, he's still making an impact. So what I want to scream to the world is your life can make an impact too. And the longer you are imprisoned by your grief, the less impactful you can be, the less you can make your impact on this world.
I 100% agree. 100%.
That's what I want to scream, is that I had to realize that my son's life and death was a chapter in my life. It wasn't my life. It wasn't what defines my life. It's not the label I'm going to give myself the rest of my life. I am Brandon's mom. I am Trey's mom. I am Rob's wife. I am Sherry. I am an author. I wear many hats, right? Why do I want to hold on to grieving mom as the total definition of who I am? I don't want to get, you know, I'm a believer. I don't want to get to the end of my life and God say, Sherry, what'd you do with the 50, 60 years I gave you after Brandon died? And I said, well, you took my son, and I laid in the fetal position and cried the rest of my life. That's like burying your talents. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. No, I gave you this life. Why didn't you do anything with it? Right. At least help someone else that's there that has gone through it, right? So I don't, not that I necessarily felt responsible for other people and their loss. I don't. I just feel that I'm supposed to be a light. My life is supposed to be a light shining on hope and healing. That's just what I feel like my life is supposed to be.
I identify with that. That's exactly how I feel. That's, and I feel like often it is our experience that leads us to our passions and our work often, right. Not always, but often. I think right. It's just an evolution of who we are, but you, like you said, it's the impact,
right?
No matter how long or short that experience is. And even what we think might be insignificant to someone else, like, and I'm just going to bring this up. I know we're not talking about this, but pet loss,
right,
too, is for a child can be very significant and impactful. But to many adults, it's like, it's just a dog, you know? And that's one of our first experiences often as children is how we learn how to process grief or deal with grief or, well, it's no big deal, you know, get over it. Get another dog, you know?
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you 100%. I lost my beloved dog in January. Probably these next to the loss of my son, the worst loss I have ever gone through. And I'm not going to say it's ridiculous. It is very true. I was very connected to him. And, we cannot shield our children or people from this happening. I think one of the most amazing things that my mom did, and see, that's what we try to do, is we try to shield our kids from this, and then they can't handle it. And then they are adults that can't handle it. And then we eat too much or we drink too much, or we try to numb the pain in an unhealthy way because we have no idea any healthy way of dealing with grief. But you know, it's scary. And even to a child, a dead body is scary. And I remember even as a child, the thought of forever, you know, whether a life ending forever or an everlasting life forever was scary. I couldn't put my head around eternity, right? And so those concepts are, and then you have the scared of a dead body kind of thing. So one of the things that my mom did, I thought was wonderful in hindsight, is I remember when I was like 5 years old and one of her friend's mother died and there was a viewing and my mom took me to the funeral home. And so I witnessed my first dead person, my first funeral without being emotionally attached. And so it got the unknowns and the fears of the unknowns out of the way. And so then the next time when that was a family member or a friend, well, that kind of fear wasn't there. It was just the emotional, right? And so I didn't have to deal with all that. And I think as parents, we just try to protect our children from so much. And so I would really advise, you know, any parent out there, expose your children to death in a way that if they're, if you can, as early as you can and unemotionally as possible, because then that just helps it make it a normal part of living. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Yes, yes, yes. I mean, it's normalizing grief. When you have a conversation, when you bring it to the forefront of it being a part of life, mm-hmm. you know, we grieve because we love, mm-hmm. whether it's a pet, baby, relationship, right. whatever it is.
Right.
Loss of a dream, a passion, mm-hmm. a career.
Right.
A home. I could go on and on. There's right. more than 40 plus types of losses. It's not just about right. death, but it's the death of, well, loss of safety and security. So many right. things, so many things. It childhood sets the stage for how we address and deal with those things for sure. Right. So I'm glad the conversation went there. I thought it was very helpful what you shared. And I absolutely 100%. It's in line with grief recovery. Throughout your grief experience, what has given you the most joy and hope for the future?
What has given me the most joy? Stepping into who I'm supposed to be, becoming a little less, I don't want to say less fearful. You're always fearful, becoming more courageous in living, I remember when my son was growing up, I tried to keep him protected physically. I just, you know, he would climb up to the top of a sliding board or, you know, climb up on a ladder. And I'd be like, I lost one child. I can't lose another, you know? And I realized I was inhibiting his growth and probably putting some fears, putting my stuff on him, which probably wasn't the right thing to do. I understand why I did it now. And so I try to talk to him about that stuff. You know, I just try to be open and honest about it. And I really, the joy that I have is being able to just let people know that you can live a beautiful life. It's possible. And I think just by the joy that I get from talking about this so that people realize it's possible, I want them to know it's possible. And that's what gives me the joy. When someone says, oh, I never thought of it that way. Oh, that's gold. That's gold. Because maybe there's that breakthrough. Because I just think like we all have these gifts, talents, and abilities that have been given to us. And fear always holds us back. And if we can step into who we're supposed to be, this world can be beautiful. And we're all holding a piece of ourselves back because it's been hurt, or it's been trampled on, or it's been, you know, something happened to us. And so we're trying to protect that and keep it from happening again, but we can't. We can't. And so we just have to learn how to move through it, but moving through it can be a beautiful process. So I didn't realize this until a couple of months ago. I did not know that there was a term for this, but we always talk about, you know, the post-traumatic stress that horrible things that happen in your life can cause you. But I think in my case, I've had post-traumatic growth and have been able to see the beauty in life and to see the goodness in life. And to be able to want to embrace that and put my eye on that. So a lot of beauty came out of this. A lot of growth came out of this. A lot of transformation came out of this. And so that's the biggest joy I have.
I love that. I would like to talk a little bit more about that post-traumatic stress or post-traumatic
growth.
Yeah, because I've heard that float around too on social media and stuff. And I think that also comes with its own grief because we can lose relationships based on our growth. We can have an awareness of, okay, well, you know, you can come along, I'll bring you with me, but if you're not going to come along and, you know, you can lose relationships in that way. You can have an awareness that you didn't have before that can bring to light, well, that's kind of a toxic relationship. That's kind of a toxic person, or that career is toxic, or what have you, whatever it is. And there's grief that comes with that. Maybe even where you live, you might realize, well, what I really want is this, but this is where I'm at. And now that you have a lot of change.
Well, that happened to me with my career. I left a you know, very established, well-established career in broadcasting and left it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is not good for me. This is not a good career for me. I was wondering why I was so miserable. I tried to go, I was able to compartmentalize the day's news and come home and still be mom, still be a wife, still be happy. But after my son died, that's when Columbine happened. And then 2 years later, that's when 9/11 happened. And it was like, I could not compartmentalize anymore. The world's grief and pain became mine. My pain, you know, I could not differentiate between any of it. And it just became too excruciating to remain there. I tried it for a year and it didn't work. And I couldn't get out of it. A counselor actually said, you can leave, you know, you're allowed to leave. But that's the thing. I didn't give myself that permission. I had to have a counselor. And now I try to do the work myself so that I can give myself the permission to move ahead as I need to move ahead, to grow into who I was created to be. That's what we're born for, is to grow into who we're created to be.
I've often wondered that as I watch the news, you know, everything going on, and I try not to, like, my husband leaves in the morning, it's off, turned off.
Yeah.
But it's on in the background, you know, in the mornings and stuff. And I've often wondered that, though, about the people that's their career to report the bad news, because it's not all sunshine and rainbows in the news. It's rarely it's rarely happy news. And so I've often wondered about that, like if what kind of support news anchors have, or if any, is that even a thing?
Not when I was in it. No. And we're the gatekeeper. So for 8 hours, I was a news producer, anchor, and reporter. And so if I produced the news that day, I was taking in all the news from the networks, from the different states, from the different countries. And then I would decide what I was pushing out to the audience, right? So for 8 hours, I'm taking all of this in. So I'm taking in much more than I'm pushing out to you, right? I'm taking 8 hours in and pushing out 30 minutes to you. And so, you know, 16 years of that, think about that, you know? I call myself a recovering news anchor. I rarely watch the news. Maybe, I don't even think it's once a week. During the pandemic, maybe 2 times a month.
Enough to stay informed, right?
You know what's going on. I mean, yeah. Believe me, you know what's going on. And so, I mean, if I need to find something out, I know where to find it. But to sit and be fed, you know, 24-hour news cycles, 24-hour news stations, quite frankly, in my opinion, do more harm than good. They disrupt. It was never meant to be taken in for 24 hours. It was meant to be convenient to catch the news as was convenient for you. Okay. But now they've done all these tricks with the teases to keep you staying tuned in for the advertising dollars and whatnot. And so they want to keep you there as long as they possibly can. And so how can you not, if you feed yourself this steady diet of all this negative news and the world is bad and every child is a target for abduction and, you know, it just like you, how can you think that we have a beautiful world out there?
Right.
You've got to turn off the TV and you've got to get out and you've got to meet your neighbors and you've got to listen to the birds and you've got to feel the sunshine on your face and you've got to feel the breeze and you've got to see the leaves and you've got to, you know, get to know one another and see what real life is all about.
See, feel, and
touch. Yeah.
Yeah. Smell the goodness that is there. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love that the conversation went here because I think that's so important with so much focus on mental health today.
Yeah.
Like, who is talking about the 24-hour news cycle? Nobody on the news.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we are contributing to this mental health issue going on with our teenagers and, you know, the constant phone access and all of this stuff. When you already have grief, which I would beg to differ that each and every one of us grieves something.
No, every single one of us
loss
that
of
is
health,
living through this pandemic right now is grieving, whether you want to admit it or not. You're grieving something.
Yes. Loss of health, loss of career, identity, whatever it is.
Freedom.
So many. Yes. Freedom. I mean, there's so many.
Connection, hugs.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. We could go on and on, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, is that serving you to watch this 24-hour news cycle? Absolutely not. Do you feel better after you're watching it?
No.
Probably not. So yeah, thank you for sharing all of that. I appreciate that. So what would say to someone who, like you, had experienced a loss of in such a way that you didn't have those experiences of joy in the meantime, did you do anything that was helpful for you immediately or during that time that you...
That I can remember? I allowed people to love me. And what I, anybody who showed up for me, even if it wasn't an awkward way, I just accepted it as loving kindness. And I really tried to focus on the people, just the gift of healing that other people were offering me in the ways that they could offer it, I guess is the best way to say it. I leaned on my family. You know, it can pull a marriage apart or it can strengthen it. And it really strengthened my marriage. My husband and I just, you know, like today, we just had the conversation. I said, how are you doing today? He says, I think I'm doing okay. And I said, he said, how are you? I said, I don't think I'm doing so okay. And that's just how it's been through our marriage, is that he's strong when I need him to be strong, and I'm strong when he needs me to be strong. And so we honor that, and we talk about it, and we check in with each other. And so that's what I say, is just to be open and honest and vulnerable. And you know, I'm not fine is an okay answer. Mm-hmm. I'm not fine is an okay answer. And I know this is off the subject, but I just want people to know that there's nothing that you can say or do that's going to make it all better for someone. So take the pressure off of yourself and just show up and love. Right? Mm-hmm. You can't, there's no magic words. This is just something you have to get through. And so that's, I guess, you know, I focused on the good things in my life. I focused on where the love was. I focused on my 3-year-old son. I focused on the people who were loving us through it. I was just trying to focus on the good that was still there in my life. And there is still good there in your life. You just have to look for it.
Look for it. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to circle back too to the loss of your pet, because that was very recent.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a pet loss program, and that's how important the Grief Recovery Institute feels pet loss is in our mm-hmm. society to many people. How have you allowed yourself to kind of work through that? And how have you been working through that loss?
It was a shock. It was something that was unexpected, and the feelings were coming up fast and furious, which was something that, you know, it was different because my son, I knew from 18, I had anticipatory grief with my son, right? I didn't have anticipatory grief. So this was just sudden, and he died in my arms, and I was just shocked, you know, and the feelings came up. And I just thought, they're coming out. And I remember just sobbing, and my husband and my son were sitting there. And I said, I am totally committed to honoring this grief and this process. And I am just going to let you know that I'm honoring all parts of it. I am going to be vulnerable. And when it comes, I'm going to feel it. And if that makes you uncomfortable or makes someone else uncomfortable, that is a you problem. That is not a me problem.
I love that.
And I honored that, and I stayed true to that. And when I want to cry, I cry for my dog. And, I literally just, I felt release. I mean, I felt like this, I did it healthily. I used the tools. I journaled. I did all the things, you know what I mean? Like I did all the things that I needed to do to go through it. I didn't try any shortcuts. I kept saying, I'm not fine, but I know I will be. I'm not fine now. But I know I will be. And just knowing that I will be gives myself the permission to get through it the way I need to. And that's what I want people to know, is that when it comes to grief, you think you're fooling. Who are you fooling? You know, like, who are you trying to pull the wool over there? You're not. Your body knows you're hanging on to it. You know, it will come out. It will come out as anger. It will come out as frustration. It will come out as addiction. It will, but it's going to come out. So why not do it do it in the way that's most healthy.
Healthy, yeah.
For you.
Yeah.
But that scares us. I remember telling people this before I did the grief recovery with my son. I'm afraid that if I ever attach to that grief, that I will never be able to release it. Like, once I start crying, I'll never be able to stop. But that's not true. It's not true. You will someday, at some point of some day, have cried enough, right? It doesn't mean that you won't ever cry again, but the crying will come to an end.
From the pain, right?
Crying
from the pain is a very different cry than crying from the sadness.
Yes. Yeah. And there is a difference.
Yes. Like, crying so hard that you think your head is going to explode, like you can't take it anymore type of, very ugly cry.
Yeah.
I remember my very ugly cry. Yeah. When I worked on my relationship in grief recovery. Yeah. It was very ugly, because that was like many, many years of buried stuff. I want to just touch on one thing too. I've heard on social media recently, I read something where someone said, you are entitled to your grief. And I've struggled with that.
I struggle with that too.
Yeah. I struggle with it, because to say that to someone who is grieving, and they were looking at the account, they were a griever too. You're entitled to the grief. Well, you're entitled to your feelings. Yeah. And you're going to have your grief, but to say it, I think, and communicate it in that way, it just speaks to that attachment spoke of.
I was just going to say attachment. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this, like your Velcro.
Right.
To the grief.
Well, your label, label. And I have a real problem with that. That's what I was finding. I think that support groups can be a beautiful thing, but at the same time, I also think support groups can make you believe that you are entitled to your grief.
Well, in such a way that this is how it is just going to be.
Yeah, and that is why I have graduating grief, because I do not believe that. I, you know, like, that's why I started graduating grief, because I had been doing some other grief work and I had been going into these grief groups, and it was breaking my heart that people were being told this, that, you know, just because that's how someone else believes doesn't mean, you know, that would have horrified me if I had gone into that believing that because I lost a child, I will never be happy again, or that I will have to carry this dark cloud over my, you know, like live with a perpetual dark cloud over my life forever. I don't know. No. And, you know, you look back at, remember when the widows used to wear black for a year, but then once the black was removed, right? There's symbolism in that you carry it for a while, but then you release and you step into who you're supposed to be. And that's what I want people to realize with the graduating grief that I've started, is that I want you to do the work to step out of your pain so that you can step into loving your life again. Now, that doesn't mean that that's going to be an overnight thing, right? Because you're still going to have fears, and you're still going to have guilt, and you're still going to feel, you know, like all these feelings around that, because I did too. But wouldn't it be nice to be in a community where people are cheering for you and people are encouraging you and people are saying, you know, I'll hold your hand and we'll journey together. That's what I always tell people. We'll journey together. We're not trying to drive our car in a forward motion by only looking out our rearview mirror. I want you to see your life ahead of you. Some woman told me the other day, the thought that I have to live the rest of my life, I'm counting the days, how many days I have left to live without so-and-so. That's a horrible way to live. Why would you choose that for yourself?
Because they don't feel like they have a choice. And that's what grief makes
but
us feel like
do.
We don't. I know you and I are in the same train, with the hope train. We're yes. on the hope train.
Yes. You
don't
do
lose hope.
Have a choice.
Yeah,
yes.
You do. Yes. We are so on the same train. And I want to bring back to what you said in the visual of wearing black for a year. And,
yeah.
and you know, you have this veil and it's like, yeah, you can change the dress, change to a different color. But if you still have the veil, you're still not going to look in the mirror and see who you could be without
right.
that grief. I like to use the analogy or the comparison of a veil. Like grief is a veil over our mm-hmm. faces. We don't see other people the same way. We don't look at ourselves the same way. It blocks us from who we are. We forget who we are even.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that grief and trauma and all those rocks that we accumulate.
And the physiological, you know, that's why I'm like, why don't people know about this? You know, first of all, and secondly, why wouldn't you immediately try to do something to feel better? Right.
I got a point on that. And this is my shtick on this. So in grief, we're suffering. You suffer. You feel
right.
like you're just suffering. Why not suffer, but move forward in the process?
Mm-hmm.
You're suffering anyway.
Right.
The worst has already happened. You lost
right.
your loved one. There's only one way but up. How can you get any, I mean, you could get lower, I guess, if you allow
yeah.
yourself to keep down.
Well, I have
right?
a saying for that. I say, if you lay, you decay.
Oh, that's perfect. That's going to be your quote card.
If you lay, you decay, just like anything in life.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
If you lay, you decay. So you've got to get back up. So that's what graduating grief is kind of like. It's twofold. It's like I was thinking about it when I was in my support group and I told my husband I did not want to go back anymore. And he's like, why? They're lovely people. And I said, because I don't want to be sad every other Tuesday of the month. Like, I don't want to be in deep suffering and pain. I wanted to start feeling better. This was before I knew about grief recovery method, right? So I thought, well, what was that? Well, I was ready to graduate to the next level. So that's part of it. I was ready. So what is the next level? Well, there is none. So that's what I created, right? So that's what my support community, that's what my podcast is all about. But it's also, you think about the grief and you're laying down in the fetal position and it's dark and it's lonely. But then there's this gradual, you sit up and then you look around. And then you have to decide maybe kneel, and then you put one foot up and then another foot up, and then you're standing, and then you can turn towards the light and start taking steps into the light. So it's a gradual process from here to hope, right? So it has a double meaning, but it's possible. But if you lay there, you'll decay. You got to get up. You got to get up.
I think two people are afraid. I mean, many people are fearful of change. And so if we have this awareness of, oh, I guess I do have a choice. I guess there is something that might help me. Ooh, well, that can be uncomfortable too. And I think it's the fear of not knowing what it's going to lead to or how it's going to make you change or not make you change, but change you in the process.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. I was the most, it's the craziest thing, how I've become a much more positive person since the death of my son than prior. I was the most negative, resistant to change. If it's not broke, why fix it? Everything in my life, I did not want it to change. I wanted a comfort zone, right? And then when my son died, I realized the comfort zone does not exist. Like, it's the biggest lie. Like, it will change. Life will change whether you want it to or not. And my son's death was proof of it. So now how do I want to operate, right? It's going to change whether I want it to or not. And it, and you're not always going to like the change, mm-hmm. but it's still going to change. Even if you say, I'm devoting all your time, Sherry, to raising your other son now. Well, guess what? He's going to grow up and he's going to leave. And so mm-hmm. he's changing. Everything changes. So you can either change with it, or you can stay in a state of suffering, because that's what you're going to do. The more you're resistant to the change, the more you are suffering. You're in a state of suffering.
What we resist persists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So good. We've covered a lot in a short, it's just time flies. First of all, is there anything else you would like to share today?
Oh my gosh. I think that, I don't know how there possibly is. I'm sure there are. I'm sure we could probably talk for another 2 hours, but I think I just want people to realize, you know, you have to decide. You have to decide what you want to do. And the longer you deny it, the more you will suffer. So why not just, you know, do the work? It's going to be painful. It's going to be so worth it. There's a freedom that comes and a release that comes that is absolutely amazing. So do it, you know, just do it.
And like you touched on earlier too, it's like when I started to really do the work on myself, that's when opportunities opened up. Yes. And I was saying yes to yes. things I never fathomed I would say yes to.
Right. Right.
Speaking in front of people and just the right. podcast, like, well, I don't know how, I've never done it. Well, I'll learn, I'll teach myself, you know, right. It's like, what's the worst that can happen, right? Like,
I think that's the philosophy that I have adopted. What's the worst that can happen? It already has.
Yeah.
So yeah. And why not live, right?
Exactly. And you find yourself putting yourself out there in ways that you never thought either. Because like, what's the worst they can say? No.
Right.
It's not living a half life, like someone had shared with me a while back, and it's kind of stuck with me. It's like, do you want to live a half life or do you want to live a full life?
Right.
Where can people reach you?
SherryDunleavy.com is probably the, you know, the most common way you can find information about my book. I also have a quiz at graduatinggrief.com just to see if you're ready. You're ready to graduate from your grief. And I started the Graduating Grief podcast and group on Facebook. So join us there if you want to live encouraged after loss, right? So that's, we journey together and to create beautiful lives that we were created to live.
Amen to that.
To do. Yeah.
Yes. Love that mission. Thank you so much, Sherry, for being here. It's been wonderful. And remember, when you unleash your heart, you unleash your life. Much love.
From my heart to yours, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, please share it, because sharing is caring. And until next time, give and share compassion by being a heart with ears. And if you're hurting, know that what you're feeling is normal and natural. Much love, my friend.